2. Finding the One. In the early 2000s, Ethan worked for one of the largest, most high-profile advertising agencies in the United States. Their offices were located in Manhattan and were run by a celebrity in the field. He had a brash personality, a true New Yorker, was opinionated, and not afraid to yell. Consequently, at that time, many on his leadership team ruled their departments in a similar style. Ethan entered the company as the assistant to the man leading the digital and direct/print production portion of the agency. He was a man who yelled a lot. To say he was demanding would be an understatement. Should anyone complain, he let them know where exactly they could go. So perhaps it's no surprise that prior to Ethan's arrival, he had gone through 13 assistants in the previous 12 months. That last line is not a series of typos. The man literally had 13 assistants in 12 months. Yes, you could say he was a bit of a tyrant. Ethan was hired simply because he was a male, had experience in the entertainment industry, and had worked for some fairly demanding personalities. On Ethan's first day, he found a blow-up doll sitting in his seat, covered with post-it note messages. It was basically a welcome aboard gift from his coworkers wishing him luck via euphemisms his new principal favored. It was their lighthearted attempt to let Ethan know right away that this was not a company that held hands, that everyone was an adult hired to do a job, and nothing else really mattered. However, in the end, Ethan got the last laugh. He stayed with the company longer than his principal did. You could also say that if Ethan's principal had been a little pickier and taken the time to find the right EA for him from the beginning, he would not have spent so much time looking for others, time he could have spent on activities that would positively impact the company's bottom line. Though sometimes it can seem as if you need to find someone right away, as was the case with Ethan's principal, it's often better to take your time when hiring an EA. A sense of urgency may cause you to discount any potential negatives in a candidate that could wind up causing you to let them go in just a couple of months and start the hunt anew. As Dr. Stephen Covey says, what is important is seldom urgent, and what is urgent is seldom important. It is more important you find the right person than it is that you find the first one to fill a vacancy. Granted, it can be difficult to find the right EA. Everyone looks almost too perfect on their resume. So here are what we consider the key attributes to keep top of mind when recruiting an EA, how to make the offer, and how to recognize when it is time to let someone go. Know your needs. Before initiating the recruiting efforts, it's imperative that a principal takes the time to figure out what exactly they need or want in an assistant. Recently, the CEO and co-founder of a company reached out to us. They were going to use an executive search firm to find him an executive assistant, but they thought perhaps they'd need someone else to support the entire executive team as well. On a Zoom call with the executive team, we discovered the CEO wasn't on board with two newly hired positions, so they wanted to find one person to support the CEO, the COO, and the VP of business development, and then eventually work for the rest of the team once they were brought up to speed on how the operation worked. Instead of going with a headhunting firm, they decided to see what we could come up with in terms of providing a remote executive assistant. They sent the job description. It was a beefy role with lots of responsibilities, yet we found the perfect EA for them. They interviewed her and brought her on board. We checked in with her a week later and discovered the CEO was really monopolizing more than one-third of her resources, which was the limit they had all agreed he'd ask of her. Soon after, the company confirmed he wanted her as his own EA, and the team would need to find someone else. Of course, we were happy to find that someone else for that additional position. However, it would have been more expedient for them to have us find both positions after they thoroughly thought through what each member of the leadership team needed. After cataloging those responsibilities, they would then know what to look for in a new EA. Another way of recognizing what you need in an EA is to see where you are the bottleneck causing delays and confusion. If someone needs to send an executive 3 emails over the course of a week to get them to sign a document in order to move a project forward, that is probably a sign the executive has too much to do, as is when they are perpetually a week and a half or more behind. When they ask their teams why something has not been completed, only to find out it's because they, the principal, had not followed through on a minor task. And when they are chronically late to meetings, Forget about meetings and calls or say yes to too many things so that their schedule ends up being double or triple booked. With each one, the principal should look at what they are doing poorly or procrastinating on and assign those duties to their EA. Whether that means letting the EA monitor their emails, take over the project management of an endeavor, or be the point of contact for their scheduling, all will remove the bottleneck the executive caused and smooth out operations. We recently signed on a new client who told us she just had too much to do. None of it was necessarily hard to do, but she just didn't want to do a good portion of it because she had more interesting or important tasks to check off. That's a common plight. The next fire drill that comes along is always more interesting than knocking out the boring stuff on your to-do list. So things like completing an insurance claim form will perpetually land on the bottom of the pile on her desk. Meanwhile, that pile continued to grow until she signed with us and we found an EA to eliminate it. That principal's pile actually brings us to a very important point. Sometimes it is not a matter of what you need your EA to do for you, but rather what do you want them to do? Or what is it that you do not want to do? Do you spend more time making travel arrangements, sending thank you notes, researching service providers, filing, itemizing expenses, trying to end unwanted calls, or dealing with other tasks that don't directly contribute to the bottom line than you do on those things that will? Those unwanted or time-consuming tasks can become the job responsibilities of the EA. Once you know what responsibilities you want to assign to your EA, the next question is, what hard or technical skills will be needed to fulfill those responsibilities? Additionally, what specific soft skills? As we will discuss in the next chapter, always remember that soft skills are more important than the technical ones. For now, the important thing is that you have cataloged the responsibilities you want your EA to have and the requisite skills for those responsibilities. With that, you can create a job description. And that means you are ready to recruit. Recruiting. We understand recruiting can be daunting. And we have discovered that executives who have never had an assistant are often the most reluctant to bother trying to find one. However, after working with an assistant for just a short period of time, they change their tune and cannot imagine ever working solo again. The reason for their initial reluctance usually comes down to money. Sure, there is a huge threshold to cross when it comes to trust and privacy, and most successful people are cognizant of how much money they are spending. Whether they're worth hundreds of millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands, or hundreds of hundreds, we have noticed a phenomenon that is so prevalent among them, we believe it's a genetic tendency. That is, successful principals are very cost-minded. So they think, I can do all of these things myself, so why should I have to pay someone to do it? What they forget about is that these things that always end up at the bottom of the pile could add up to cost quite a bit of money. Lost contracts, poor relations with people you did not respond to, even those insurance claims, if not completed within a time frame, will become unreimbursable. If cost is a serious consideration, principals need to remember technology has enabled new options. For less than a full-time employee working in your office, companies like ProAssisting can partner with you to provide a committed assistant who will be able to provide the full service of an in-house person at a third of the cost. Or, if you truly believe you need someone to live in your office, local colleges will be happy for your company to provide intern opportunities. Virtual assistants are another option. And you can get creative and pay the receptionist a little more to take on some administrative responsibilities. Of course, you can always hire a full-time EA, pay them what they are worth, which in large metropolitan areas means a six-figure salary, and enable them to be a mini-me. To help figure out what you really need, we put together a presentation, The State of the Assistant in a Remote World, that is a helpful overview of virtual assistant, remote executive assistant, administrative assistant, and executive assistant roles, and that includes details about what differentiates them and the expected pay rate. You can download that guide here, https://info.proassisting.com/download-state-of-the-assistant. Once you realize you need someone to help, and you know exactly what you want that person to do, it is time to put out an ad, or have your HR department do it, and begin the recruiting process. Now that you have the job description for your EA, because you know their needs, the next step is to start the hunt. The ideal method to recruit the perfect EA is to send an email to your HR department and let them handle the recruiting. However, if you have neither an HR department nor a recruiter in your contacts, you will need to do a little work for yourself. Also, depending on what kind of position you are filling, i.e. a virtual assistant, remote executive assistant, in-house, etc., you will have various options to review. There is always the traditional route of contracting with an outside recruiter. They will take the legwork out of finding and screening applicants. They will also take a fee equivalent to 20% of the annual salary of anyone you hire through them. Opposite that route is a free option on LinkedIn. That platform has an open-to-work status that allows people searching for potential candidates to find them easily. In between those extremes are online job listings like Indeed.com, which does have a free option but charges a fee for a better service. Similarly, there is RemoteWork.com, which is a site focused on just remote workers. Facebook also has a jobs page that is free to use, but if you want to cast your net into a targeted pool of candidates, you will need to pay a fee to boost the job as an ad. If you are looking for a virtual assistant, a Google search will provide a list of companies that specialize in connecting you with people of varying skill levels. If you are comfortable hiring an intern, local colleges have career placement centers that help their students and graduates find jobs. And of course, for a true top-level EA, there are companies like ProAssisting that specialize in providing remote superpower assistance to busy executives. Before you meet, first impressions count. Most likely, a candidate's resume will have been proofread multiple times, as will their cover letter. So obviously, any mistakes you find on it are red flags that perhaps their skills are not where you need them to be. Obviously, their sense of accuracy or attention to detail are a little off. Or worse, for your purposes, they did not do the proofreading they should have. When we are searching for a top-level EA at ProAssisting, we start off by looking not only at a candidate's resume, but their LinkedIn profile as well. If they cannot present their information in a professional way that makes sense in both places, it's another red flag. While reviewing that material, we look at their experience and take note of whether they have been a chief of staff, project manager, or administrative assistant at any time in their career, because the hard skills that come with those positions are invaluable for an EA. We look at their career progression. Did they constantly move up in titles? Are there any backslides that they do not seem to have moved forward from? What level was the person they assisted in their previous position, and how big was that company? If the titles of the people with whom they have worked progressively went up or they reached the C-suites, that tells us the person worked at a large company, usually employing more than 50 people, which in turn means they have probably experienced a much broader scope of responsibilities than someone at a small family company with a handful of employees. Notice we have not mentioned anything about checking to see if the person has experience in the specific industry or type of business at hand. That's because, while it could be of benefit to have someone steeped in the general nature of what your company does, it is not really necessary. A good EA is a chameleon who can use their foundational skills and knowledge to blend into any environment. In terms of tenure, we prefer to see people remain in their jobs for more than a year. However, if there is a blip of less than a year in between two long-term positions, we will not hold that against them. No one is a good fit for every company, and we understand that. If the other positions are high level, we will still want to talk to the person and take the opportunity to hear how they explain the blip. Stephanie is a prime example of why it is a good idea to hear candidates out. She worked for a hedge fund manager for 7 years, where she grew her skills tremendously. Her principal trusted her completely and handed over the project management for organizing company retreats and overseeing the construction, build-out, and decorating of a $55 million estate, among other projects. However, Steph loves fashion, and when a high-level position opened up in the fashion industry, she took the opportunity. Unfortunately, within a year, she realized she loved fashion much more than working in the fashion industry, so she left. After she decompressed, she worked for another hedge fund manager for 2.5 years before leaving when we made a long-distance move. We started our business at that point. If we hadn't, she would have felt comfortable interviewing for another job elsewhere because her story is cohesive, it makes sense, and she's not the only one to have such experiences. Steph's story is a prime example of why we feel it is important for people to be given a chance to explain short-term positions. However, if a person cannot explain a gap in their employment, or they tell a convoluted tale about short-term employment, then we see that as a red flag and do not move them on to the next round. We also give people a chance to explain their job titles. we realize you cannot always trust a title listed on a resume. In some companies, people with the title executive assistant really only do the work of an administrative assistant. In others, an administrative assistant is really doing executive assistant level functions. So we do not just read a job title and skip over the description. If a person has applied for a position, we will look past the titles to check out their responsibilities. When we are reading through a candidate's LinkedIn profile, we pay attention to whether they have taken the time to put up a background photo. If they have, it shows they put thought into how they're presenting themselves to the world. If they haven't, we move on, because that is a differentiating factor in terms of someone who truly understands the role of an EA. We also look at their profile picture. We are not concerned with how attractive a candidate is, but if the image shows them slurping Jell-O shots on a beach instead of a professional headshot, we will take a pass, because that tells us they need to up their game as far as professionalism goes. When it comes to education, we do not always believe a bachelor's degree is necessary. A candidate can have a skill set built up from previous positions and even a natural affinity for the position. Also, when the candidate's resume displays a perpetual expansion and progression of responsibilities, that is evidence of them being able to quickly adapt and succeed in new positions. So, often we will put as much weight onto their career history as their education. However, we do like to see that the candidate took extra courses or certifications. Whether that is in Photoshop or event management, it doesn't really matter. The additional education tells us the person is willing to learn and improve upon whatever skills they have. We have frequently met and prefer candidates who are career EAs. One of the ways that is made evident on a resume or in a LinkedIn profile is through not only a continuation of ways they have tried to better their skills and improve their performance, but that they belong to communities of assistance. Groups like the American Society of Administrative Professionals, the Administrative Assistant Office Professional Network, or one of the LinkedIn communities for assistance. Those groups help their members stay at the leading edge of assistant work, which means they can bring innovative skills to support you and your team. If we see an applicant with a continuous career path who is also a member of those types of groups, we know that person is a strong candidate. They really want to be in a position for the long haul. They enjoy the work they do, and they have a servant's heart. When you meet, second, third, and fourth impressions count. As with a resume, that first handshake and the first conversation you have may not give you an accurate portrayal of your candidate. Their speaking voice and the way they make eye contact and hold their posture during the initial interview will be done with utmost care to present to you the person you want to hire, not necessarily the person they really are. Gruff people can pull off polished and charming for an interview. So go beyond that first impression and ask questions aimed toward revealing what may be behind the veneer. 1. How did they manage their previous principal's time? Can they give an example of when it was more tricky than usual? 2. What about an example from when they had to play the role of gatekeeper? How did they deal with a senior leadership team wanting to see the executive without an appointment or checking with them first? 3. How did they handle a crisis or problematic situation? Listen to the answers and look for clues that tell you whether this person used EA superpowers to achieve the best results for everyone. And if not, were the results they achieved accomplished with panache and confidence, or with abrasive assertiveness? Based on their answers, you should ultimately ask yourself, is this the kind of person I want representing me and my company? Something to keep in mind as you are interviewing is that a pause before answering is not a negative. EAs often perform so many functions and have been through so many different scenarios that they may need to stop and think about specific examples to pull from a vast array of experiences. So instead of asking them, "What did you do at Company X?" instead ask, "Tell me what your responsibilities were when you first started." Then, when they have answered that, ask them what their responsibilities were when they left or are currently fulfilling. Compare and contrast the two, and you will be able to fill in the blanks for a full scope of their capabilities. Additionally, pay attention to the way a candidate answers your questions. If you have to continue to pull a thread to get them to tell you their story in a succinct way, realize that is probably how they will interact with your clients and staff members. Such a communication style makes it difficult to create personal connections and partner with others. Even though the EA will work directly for the principal, often it is a good idea to have all of the executive's direct reports and any other significant people interview the candidates as well. They can help choose a person who will fit as a member of their team, and they will also have other perspectives that can help inform the decision. At a company where Steph worked, the receptionist was always included in the hiring process. She was often the first person the candidate met in the company, hence the ultimate litmus test of the candidate's character. If that person was rude to her or wasn't gracious when she offered to take their coat, that was a sure sign the person was not a good choice for the company. Be casual. We always suggest that principals try to have at least one interview that is more casual than an in-office meet and greet. Meeting over breakfast or lunch can be ideal because it will give the principal a better idea of what the person is really like. Your office, with a desk between you, will set up a psychological barrier that may prevent the candidate from giving you a full picture of who they are and what kind of character they possess. Whereas breakfast or lunch meetings tend to remove that barrier so you get a fuller, more real picture of them on which to base your hiring decisions. At these meetings, consider their tone of voice. Are they at ease having a general conversation? Do they easily make eye contact? How do they treat the staff at the restaurant? Are they pleasant to them? Does it seem as if this person will be congenial to work with? Being able to communicate clearly and effectively, to carry on a free-flowing conversation that doesn't feel forced or stilted, is so very important, especially in today's world where so much interaction is done via phone or video conference. In such a casual situation, you can also see how open someone is to criticism. A technique we use to check on that is to challenge people about how their resumes differ from their LinkedIn profile. Watching how they react to such a question in a relaxed atmosphere will reveal just how they will handle mistakes or corrections. This is also a great time to get stories that check all the boxes of the performance multipliers, as we will discuss in the second part. Those stories will be about how they gave their principals input on marketing campaigns, about their project management work, about how they interacted with all the direct reports and other staff, how they juggled scheduling, and how they managed tasks that would fall under the rubric of a personal assistant. As they talk about those situations over lunch or in another casual environment, you will get a better feel for their willingness to do those tasks that may be deemed meaningless because they are not specific job description functions. Of course, the danger in such meetings is that the person may feel too comfortable and overshare personal information. That is yet another red flag. If they do not have the discretion to maintain a sense of privacy and confidentiality with their personal business, then you know they will not have it to maintain yours. Your gut will know. Often, you'll know you have found the right EA because you will feel it in your gut. There have been times when we have found assistants that seemed perfect on paper. They had the skills, they had the experience, but our gut told us something was off. Maybe they seemed a little too rough around the edges, or they treated the receptionist rudely, or something just didn't feel right when they spoke about their tech savviness. Whatever it was, our instincts cautioned us to wait and do a little more research. Every time we ignored our gut because a candidate's on-paper information was just so very good, we regretted it. So listen to your gut. If your first instinct is to say yes, then it is probably right. Likewise, listen if your gut tells you no. In the long run, you will save time and aggravation if you have the wherewithal to sit and touch base with your instincts and follow through on what they say. However, even if all signs point to go, you still need to do your due diligence before making the offer. Before making an offer. Congratulations, you have found the one. Or you think you have anyway. Before you make an offer, there are a few things to consider. If you have the luxury of an HR department, there will be little for you to do other than say, "This is the person for me." HR will handle the rest. If you don't have that luxury, there are a few more hoops we suggest you jump through before onboarding someone. Those hoops will be similar to the ones you had your other direct reports jump through. If you ran background checks on them, do the same for the potential EA. If it is important that the people who work close to you sign an NDA, then have this person do so too. The same goes for a conflict of interest. Even if you do not typically run background checks or insist on NDAs, you may want to for your EA, as it will help you establish that sacred level of trust we spoke about earlier. We typically do not follow up on references beyond confirming dates of employment and title. That may sound counterintuitive, but you seldom get any kind of information that makes the process worth it. If the candidate's full resume is on LinkedIn, there is nothing those references can tell you that will be new. Now, if after your due diligence, you still want to make the offer, have a discussion with the candidate to ensure you are both on the same page. If you are looking for a career EA, and this person is looking for a place to work for a year or two, you may want to take a pass. Similarly, if you want to find someone who is willing to grow inside the organization or industry, and possibly to grow so much that they are promoted into a different role, make sure your candidate is aware of that and willing to expand in that direction. Taking the time for clarity at the pre-offer stage can save you the time, expense, and aggravation of needing to find another person long before you want to. And finally, before making the offer, be sure you are paying this person what they are worth. At the time of this writing, a top-level EA can make a six-figure salary in large metropolitan areas, and they are worth every penny of it. Bring them in at a competitive rate and keep them at a competitive rate. If the company has a tough year and no one gets a raise or bonus, then find another incentive for your EA. Bump up their title, increase their paid time off, or find something else that is meaningful to them. Otherwise, that perfect EA will take all their superpowers and become a performance magnifier for another principal at a different company. When you have the one. So the offer is made and accepted. The perfect candidate is now performing as the perfect EA for you. Everything is great. But then, time and time again, we have witnessed executives shoot themselves in the foot after hiring the ideal candidate. How do they do that? Despite being excited about discovering someone who can be their right hand, someone who will anticipate their needs, think three steps ahead of them, and cut off problems before they can manifest, someone who can run your business life so your personal one is even more fulfilling, they do not let their EAs use their superpowers. Why do principals do that? Well, perhaps it's true that old habits die hard, and habits created out of a strong drive to control are the hardest. For some executives, trusting others to handle things they used to manage is next to impossible. They might want everything a great EA can do, but soon after hiring the ideal candidate, they revert back to their old habits. Often, without even realizing it, they withhold important information. They do not bring their EAs into conversations when decisions are being made, or they do not introduce them to anyone as a point of contact. Not every principal who has difficulty trusting their EA has control issues. Many times their own psychological programming interferes. Perhaps they had a father who was an executive and now they treat their EA the way their father treated theirs. Or perhaps they are a very private person who comes from a family that never talked about money. So why would they ever think to include their assistant in their personal life? Numerous personality quirks can interfere with a principal's ability to release control to their EA. By looking at themselves in the mirror and asking some hard questions, a principal can potentially recognize what may hold them back. Then they can reframe what the relationship with an assistant is, what it can look like, and what behaviors or attitudes that entails. Then, when you find the right person and properly vet them, you can work together to overcome your reticence to let your EA use their superpowers to support you. Actually, before any principal takes the time to go on the hunt for an EA, they should seriously ask themselves if they are sure they want someone with all those superpowers. Are you willing to let that person take ownership of projects and calendars? Are you willing to let an EA speak for you? If the honest answer is no, consider thinking about what it would take to build that level of trust in an assistant in the future. Understand that for an EA to do their best work, you will be required to let them know what you are particular about, what you may have a tendency to micromanage, and what you are willing to let the EA run while you orchestrate at a high level. When that is clear in both your mind and the EA's, then it is a matter of hitting singles and doubles, to use a baseball analogy, over and over again until you let the assistant hit a triple or possibly a home run. At that point, you may feel comfortable letting the EA be the manager of the club. Of course, if you can trust your EA right away, that means you also get the benefits right away. Time is money, after all. And we believe if you do your due diligence, your EA will prove you can trust them almost immediately. Your job is to allow them to unleash their superpowers in the way they communicate, use their technical skills, and treat others. When it is not the one. Now you have hired someone. They have gone through the onboarding, some initial training has happened to get them up to speed with the company, and something's not clicking. It's not clicking to such a degree that you are beginning to doubt you have the right person after all. What do you do? It could be another long process to find someone. Is it worth firing the EA you already have? Maybe. To answer that question, the first thing you will want to do is check in with yourself first. Have you done what you needed to for this person to provide optimum service for you? Do they need more training in a specific area? Is the problem one of hard skills, and perhaps an online course would provide the tutoring they need to improve? Did you bring them in during a maelstrom of unprecedented chaos where few people performed at their optimum level? If you are certain it's not the circumstances at fault, but that you have the wrong person, whether it is a personality mismatch or a consistent level of mistakes that suggest this person's skills are not quite what you need, being honest is the best practice to handle the situation. Long explanations are not necessary. A simple, "Look, we're just not the right fit," will do. But it is kinder if you can explain why so the person doesn't end up in a similar situation again. Optimally, if you sense this person would fit somewhere else in the company, you may try to transfer them there, or you might offer to connect them to a different company. Taking that human-centric approach lets the EA know you really do care about them, and you realize losing the job is an upset in their lives. If you have to let someone go, do not do so out of left field. Nothing is worse than being surprised by an HR director knocking on your office door or being invited to the conference room by your principal only to find out you are being let go, especially if there has not been any acknowledgement that you're not meeting expectations up to that point. Being honest about an employee's performance gives them the opportunity to improve if need be before you have to terminate their performance. As we will discuss in chapters 3 and 4, spending time honestly communicating exactly how your EA is not performing up to expectations is what will help them figure out what they need to do to change their performance. Then, if they cannot improve enough, let them go in a manner that gives them feedback so they can improve in the future. Good leaders know they will never bat 1,000 when it comes to hiring people. Some hires just won't work out, but that is no reason to be aggressive or mean to them. Top leaders have conversations to try to take something that may not be perfect and make it better. If it's fine, make it good. If it's good, make it great. That includes the way they treat people at all times, even when letting them go. Up next is a more detailed discussion on what that proof looks like, so you can easily recognize that the one you hired is truly the one.